You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
By the way, I'm an idiot. When I said 6:30, I meant to say 6:30 Pacific. I don't know why for the Kobe game, I meant to say 6:30 Pacific, and I said 6:30 Eastern, which then put me, because I was like, and then I went 3:30 Pacific, so I don't know. I was confused. I know I wrote it right for my story, because I went back and looked at what I wrote. So it was 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern, which then lends more credence to your story, LZ, as to why the magazine couldn't put it in there. So I apologize if I said
that
incorrectly.
I knew what you were saying.
Yeah. So anyway, LZ, I want to ask you this because you are a Lions fan.
Rawr.
And the big story this week is about
Don't
NFL hiring.
Why are you trying to embarrass me in front of the listeners? I've already been through enough in my life.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. but it has been a weird week for coaching hires. I would say, to put that kindly, Laura, if you have the sound of Dan Campbell, the Lions head coach. Now, look, I've got a little history with Dan Campbell because, as you know, I grew up a Dolphins fan, and mm-hmm. he was like the interim coach for a little while, one of the coaches mm-hmm. that got fired.
Did he bite
I don't
your
remember
when you were there?
Huh?
Did he bite your kneecap at all while you
He did not bite my kneecap, no. I was in Bristol already, but he did not try to bite my kneecap at all. But he was very much and I'm going to try to put this in the nicest way possible, but he's a little bit of a meathead. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. do you remember the Revenge of the Nerds movie?
Yep.
Do you remember Ogre? Dan Campbell reminds me of Ogre. There is also a character on South Park that's like a teacher who's like a bro teacher. Like, God, what is the name of that character on South Park? South Park... bro teacher. I bet you if I Google it, it will come up.
PC principal.
PC principal. Yes. PC principal. That is Dan Campbell. If you want to do yourself a favor, just Google image PC principal South Park and Google Dan Campbell and you will see exactly what I'm talking about. So anyway, Dan Campbell gets named the Lions head coach because he went in there to those offices and swayed those executives and owners by going out there and being a meathead. Go ahead, Laura.
This place has been kicked. It's been battered. It's been bruised. And I can sit up here and give you coach speak all day long. I can give you, hey, we're going to win this many games. I can't. But none of that matters, and you guys don't want to hear it anyway. You've had enough of that. So excuse my language. All right? Here's what I do know is that this team – is going to take on the identity of this city, all right? And this city's been down, and it found a way to get up, all right? It's found a way to overcome adversity, all right? And so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right, and on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up, and then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right, that's going to be the mentality.
Okay, listen. First of all, if you've been knocked down that many times, and that person is still knocking you down that many times, why is it taking them more times to knock you down every time? You've got to be exhausted if you've been knocked down. Because the first time they knocked you down, LZ, it was one shot. And then after you kicked them in the teeth, and then he smiled at you. But then the next time he took you down, it was two shots and got back up. And then three shots and got back up. Nobody gets stronger in a fight as it goes on. So that in itself is a fallacy.
I'm so embarrassed. I'm actually more embarrassed by his press conference than I was for the 0-16 season we experienced. And I'm not even joking.
Right.
Because my hometown team the team of Detroit, the team in downtown Detroit that became of prominence under the guidance of one of the first African-American mayors in the history of this country, who guided us from like the ashes and blah, 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 blah,
right,
blah.
Right.
In this year of all years, on the heels of racial reconciliation and social justice and all the, we know all the background.
Right.
They went out and got that dude.
PC principal.
That dude.
Yeah.
What? Was it not embarrassing enough to have Matt Patricia walking around with a pencil in his ear that he didn't even need? Was that not embarrassing enough to endure that? Jim Caldwell, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, Coach Caldwell was a black man. Coach Caldwell got us to the playoffs multiple times. When I tweeted about this guy, I said, hell, bring back Wayne Fonts. Wayne Fonts got us to the playoffs at least multiple times, including an NFC championship game.
Yeah. Scott Mitchell,
exactly.
Barry Sanders. Yeah.
And I'm like, you fired Jim Caldwell for disappointment, right? Disappointment. And you've been descending ever since.
Right.
And I'm sitting here and I'm like going, there are so many more qualified people.
Yes.
Than the kneecap guy who has intern and interim on his resume, but not coordinator of any sort.
No. Did you see the picture I just sent you?
Oh, God.
It's the South Park character.
Oh, Lord.
Doesn't he look like Dan Campbell?
Oh, gosh. I'm so embarrassed. I'm not just embarrassed for Detroit or the state of Michigan. I'm embarrassed. Oh, God, that is him.
I told you. That is the South Park character. PC principal.
They went out and hired a caricature of a football coach. So I'm just sitting here and I'm just like, it's not even though I've written about extensively, including like today.
Yeah, in the LA Times, I saw that.
About the racial gap in hiring.
No coaches of color hired. 7 openings.
As so far, there was one Muslim American.
There's one left, right?
Which I was happy to see.
Oh, right. Salah, yeah.
Yeah, over in with the Jets. But 7 vacancies, and so far, you know, and we had to beg the Houston Texans to interview Eric Bieniemy. So I'm sitting here and I'm like going, all right, Lions, who did you hire?
Yeah.
And then the press conference comes out and I'm like, are we tanking for who? Who's the next quarterback we're tanking for? Because clearly you didn't go out and do our best. This is not our best.
Oh, it's so great.
It just isn't.
I want him to bite more kneecaps all year long. I just want to play kneecap biting all year. Is what I want. That's what I want.
It's embarrassing, though.
I know that nobody here really cares about the Lions, but I feel like the audio that Dan Campbell could provide could be one of the greatest sources of entertainment that we could have next football season if he continues talking about biting kneecaps. Let me go to Jason, who's in Downey, who's been holding patiently. He wants to talk about being at that 81-point game for Kobe. Oh. Today is the 15-year anniversary. Jason, how are you?
First and foremost, I got to say, it's glad to have Laura back, because when I called, when she wasn't, the phone just rang. I called.
Wow. That is a shot at everyone not named Laura.
My bad, dog. I heard it ringing, but I was on air. My bad.
It's all good. But, yeah, I remember that day to a T. I remember every time I tried going to a game with my dad, it just was hard because I worked at 7, and the games were at 7:30, and those games were so damn expensive that even if someone said, show up late, you missed a lot, and you didn't get your money's worth. So that Sunday, my dad was like, yo, man, I got these tickets at Sunday at 6:30. Let's go. And I remember even having a pre-meal at Manuel Sepia. I had myself a Hollenbeck burrito, carne asada, and we went. And who knew that we would leave that night, think probably the best game he's ever played. I even laughed too because I had every Kobe jersey, you know, from the OG purple to the yellow. I even had a like when they changed the jerseys that night. I bought myself a Lamar Odom jersey because I said, you know what, I have too many Kobes. Let me switch it up. I bought it before the game, and then I was like, well, maybe I should have just bought the eight white jerseys. I didn't do it. But, man, that game was special, and it's crazy that, you know, it's a 15-year anniversary, and then we're coming up on his death, I think, Tuesday, and it's going to be a rough one for Los Angeles. I can honestly say I have the when he died, I tattooed 24-8 on me because he meant so much to not only Los Angeles but to me. So, and thank you guys for letting me on there. Have a great day.
All right, Jason, thanks, be safe, man. That's Jason and Downey. 877-710-ESPN. If you want to continue throughout the show, we're going to celebrate Kobe's 81-point game, the 15-year anniversary. But coming up next, LZ, we were just talking about the issues in the National Football League, and our next guest is certainly more than qualified to handle that conversation. Howard Bryant of ESPN will join us to talk about the memory of Hank Aaron. The biggest story in sports today is the passing of the great Hank Aaron. We will talk to Howard, who wrote the book, literally, on Hank Aaron in just a few moments. We'll be back in 3.5 minutes.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Sedano and LZ with you here on 710 ESPN on a Friday. It's an action-packed show. We've got so many things we've been discussing today. Kobe's 81-point anniversary, obviously just the game yesterday, right? And nothing sadder, unfortunately, than the passing of Henry Aaron today. And we are having on Howard Bryant of ESPN and NPR, wrote literally the book on Henry Aaron, on Hank Aaron. And he's joining us here now. We're thankful to have him on. Howard, thank you so much for joining us. But before we get into Hank Aaron's career, I just want to tell you about our friend LZ Granderson. So check this out. So during the break, you know, we usually communicate during the break, right? Hey, LZ, so I was thinking of this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm talking, and all of a sudden I'm like, LZ, are you there? Are you there? I'm like, did we lose LZ? And they're like, no, he's connected. So eventually, he comes back like a minute later. He's huffing and puffing. And LZ, tell Howard why you were huffing and puffing.
So first of all, what's up, Howard? So I'm charged with making dinner for the fam, right? Which I love. I love cooking. So I put on a tri-tip in the smoker, you know, in the middle of the day, and knowing that it would be done before the show. But then I decided to throw in some potatoes as well. You know, might as well bake the potatoes while I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I get to rip the tri-tip out, but the potatoes aren't done. And I said to myself, oh, well, I'll just run out and get the potatoes out during commercial break. That was 90 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
So as I'm looking out the window, I see smoke coming from over where the grill and stuff is in the kitchen outside. And I'm like going, dang, I thought I turned that thing off. Oh, no, the potatoes. And
yeah.
So I sprinted out.
Yeah. Yeah.
To get the potatoes.
Oh, no. Famous last words.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, we won't be having any taters. So I don't know what they got with going with the tips, but it won't be potatoes.
Luckily, you were coming on because we had a lot of things to discuss with you anyway. So it was going to be a short conversation during the break between me and him that we never got to have. But nonetheless, Howard, thank you so much for joining us here. And again, if you haven't had a chance to see Howard's book, about Hank Aaron, obviously passed today. The Last Hero, a Life of Henry Aaron by Howard Bryant, our guest right now. You know, Howard, I guess my first question to you would be, as someone who wrote his biography, what would be the aspect of his life that, if someone wasn't intimately familiar with him, would surprise them the most?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, Henry, you have to remember, I mean, here's a man born in 1934. You're born in the Great Depression. You lived through World War II. You lived through civil rights. You lived through everything. I think the thing that I find most amazing about Henry is the number of different places where he was involved. Like, for example, let's do this one. Henry was a lifelong Democrat, okay? He was a lifelong Democrat and had been involved in Democratic politics since the early 1960s, since 1960, in fact. The reason he was involved in politics, we find out later, was because John F. Kennedy, the Kennedy campaign, called him to offset the influence of the one person who was his idol, Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson was campaigning for Richard Nixon, and the Kennedy campaign said, we need some Negro superstar athletes out there to offset Jackie Robinson's influence. So I just find it fascinating that, that these two people who are so influential to each other and to the world were actually put in opposition to one another in the 1960 presidential campaign.
That's fantastic. And it's, if memory serves me correct, Howard, Dr. King's father was a Republican. I think Dr. King, too, was a Republican, right?
Yes. Until Goldwater and until Vietnam.
Yeah, that's
and then it changed.
That's absolutely remarkable. You know, I've had an opportunity to speak with him and spend time with him multiple times when I was at the AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and the thing that always struck me was the media's narrative about him being bitter just never appeared when I was around him. And I couldn't tell if it was because he was comfortable around me or because more time had passed. But can you spend some time talking about, you know, how the narrative of him being bitter really sort of conflicted, perhaps, and maybe you had a different experience, but I think generally speaking, the narrative of him being bitter really conflicted who he actually was.
Yeah, it was completely inaccurate, but I think it's a label that we see a lot of times. Here's the question, LZ. I mean, journalists, we know this, right? You know, do you want to know the story of my life or don't you? Do you want to hear what I have to say, or do you need me to say something that fits into what you want to write about or what you want to talk about? And so often in Henry's case, it was the latter. People didn't want to know what he had to say. Henry was never bitter about the facts of his life, but he told you the facts of his life. He told you what had happened to him. I remember talking to him, and he told me about how his mother used to tell him when the Ku Klux Klan used to march down the street in Mobile, they used to take all eight kids and put them under the bed. Is he bitter about that, or are these the facts of his life? These are the facts of his life. When he was playing in Milwaukee, they win the World Series in 57. They lose the World Series in seven games in 58. They make the play. They lose a three-game playoff to the Dodgers in 59. After that 59 playoff, he goes to the YMCA with Frank Torrey, with Joe's older brother, and the manager won't let the great Hank Aaron into the YMCA because the Milwaukee YMCA was segregated. And Frank Torrey was like, what kind of place do you guys run here? Don't you see that's Hank Aaron? You cheer for him every day. That's Hank Aaron. And, it, you know, rules were rules. So was he bitter telling you these things, or was he telling you what happened to him? And I think that discomfort is something that a lot of athletes and a lot of people have to deal with. It's not something that is unique to Henry, but it was at such a massive scale. How is he supposed to feel about doing everything that America asked him to do, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and the whole thing, and being self-made and playing 23 years and not complaining and never going on the DL? And then when you're finally at the top of your career, about to break Babe Ruth's record, people are threatening your family and telling you they're going to assassinate you. How are you supposed to feel?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, of course. Howard Bryant, the great Howard Bryant, joining us here of ESPN NPR. He's a great author, obviously. He has the book on Hank Aaron, The Last Hero, A Life of Henry Aaron, that was published in 2010 originally. How did he feel, Howard, about Barry Bonds surpassing him and his record?
Well, I think that he always thought, I mean, the record stood for 33 years. I think that it's an interesting place that we're in. When I started to work on Last Hero, Bonds hadn't broken the record yet. And Henry was convinced that nobody cared about him except through the lens of Bonds. He didn't even want to talk to me. It took me 2 years to actually sit down with him because he was convinced we had to make a deal. I had to agree that I was not going to ask him any questions about Barry Bonds or the record until after the record was broken.
Right.
And I remember when he and I, when we were first negotiating this and first talking about the book, he was convinced that nobody was interested in him except about Bonds. And I said, you're Henry Aaron. And he was like, yeah, but he didn't quite. I said, we could write an entire volume of about you, a three-volume set, and not mention Bonds. So he was conflicted about where the public was going. He wasn't sure where he felt where he fit. He thought it was a lose-lose if he came out and talked about how much he disapproved of performance enhancers.
then he looked like a bitter old man that didn't want his record broken, sour grapes. And if he said nothing, then he looked like he was condoning drugs. So he figured the best thing for me to do is to let this whole thing play out. I'll say what I have to say. But for the most part, I'm going to stay quiet and let it pass. And I think it was the right strategy.
Did you ever find any secret to his success? Like, we can talk, you know, ad nauseum about how he was such a gentleman and navigated some horrific racist situations in the Jim Crow South. But at the end of the day, he was easily the game's greatest hitter as well. Was there anything that he shared with you that, you know, helped you understand why he was so good at what many consider to be the hardest thing to do in sports, which is hit a baseball?
Yeah, absolutely, Ozzie. And I think the biggest thing was to do something that I find impossible, but it's clearly not impossible because he did it. And that was, we were at his house one, no, we weren't, I think we were in Cooperstown. We were up at the Hall of Fame and we were talking about concentration. And he said, the one thing I've seen it happen with so many players, I've seen guys ruin their families because the game wasn't going great. And I've seen guys ruin their careers because things weren't going well in their family. So my motto had always been, don't bring the ballpark home and don't bring home to the ballpark. And I said, well, Henry, that sounds easy. How do you do it? I mean, the guy's going through a divorce. How can you not hit 220? He's like, I went through a divorce. But that's who he was. The ability to concentrate, the ability to go out and just deal with what's in front of you. It's, you know, LZ, you know this. It's the same way people talk about Rafa Nadal being able to play point to point. And like, everything that happened before doesn't matter. And everything that happens in the future doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is this point right here. That's how Henry was. And it's just such an amazingly difficult thing to do. And with their talent level, with that concentration level, you get legend.
Hmm. Howard Bryant, the great Howard Bryant. If you'd like, you can check out the book, of course, The Last Hero, A Life of Henry Aaron. Does a phenomenal job as an author, works for us here at ESPN. We're happy to have him at NPR as well. Howard, thank you so much for making time for
us.
Wait,
George, I got one more question for you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay. It's all good. I know what it's like to follow an athlete and talk about their life and put it to a book. How did you feel? When did you find out about his passing? Because I can only assume it was very emotional for you, given the amount of time you spent and, of course, what his story meant for all of us.
Yeah, I found out this morning. I got a text from Lou Moore, the professor over at Grand Valley State. And I was just, you know, obviously immediately you're thinking about everybody. You're thinking about his wife, Billy. You're thinking about his children. You're thinking about Dusty. You're thinking about Wash. You're thinking about all the guys and Dave Stewart. And you're thinking about everybody who Henry, you know, all those connections, especially because the black community in baseball, more than any of the other sports, is tight. Especially that generation, that Jim Crow black baseball generation, very, very, very tight. And all I could think of was all of the different, you know, the chains in that reaction. And talking about it has been somewhat helpful being on the air all day. But boy, I can tell you when I hang up, it's not gonna go away. That feeling, I mean, because he's the giant. I mean, who, you know, between he and Mays, they're the two greatest living players, and now Willie is by himself.
The Last Hero, A Life of Henry Aaron. Make sure you check it out. Howard Bryant wrote it. He's our guest here of ESPN and NPR. Howard, an absolute pleasure. Thank you for making some time for us late on a Friday. We appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Howard, right, and care. Thank you for writing the book.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right, quick break. Coming up next, LZ, Anthony Davis. Ooh, he's got some honesty in him these days. Mm. He has grown into his own self. Like, he is an adult now. I love this Anthony Davis that's saying all sorts of stuff. We'll tell you what he said recently in just a moment.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Sedano and LZ with you here on 710 ESPN. Thanks to Howard Bryant for joining us there. Clint Yates going to stop by at 6:15. O'Shea is going to join us because we can't be talking about Kobe without O'Shea Jackson Jr. stopping by. So we've got them in the next hour. Please stick around for that. So it's funny. Before I get to Anthony Davis, I had a situation at the gas station today. And I would call it a situation. It was more of an observation today at the gas station, LZ. And it was, I'm there getting gas, you know, and you know what? I'll be honest. I bought myself a Mega Millions ticket because it is literally $1 billion, okay? Okay? It is $1 billion, and I said, you know what? I'm going to let these 10 bucks ride and see what happens, okay? I am normally not a lottery player, but when it gets to a certain point, I'm like, hey, I ain't going to miss out. You know, you don't play, you don't win. So I'm filling my gas, right? And, you know, I go inside real quick with my mask on and get a lottery, you know, ticket for the Mega Millions. And I noticed there's these kids behind me pumping gas. And I looked, and they are young kids, okay? They are high school kids. And they are driving an expensive-ass SUV, okay? And I don't know about you. Now, maybe it's because I grew up poor, right? And I had a hand-me-down car. But I'm telling you this. I just think, I don't care how much money you have. I feel like giving a brand new vehicle, especially an expensive brand new vehicle, to a child driving their first car, which this clearly seemed like it was, is a terrible idea. Because you know what young kids end up doing? They get into accidents, okay? They go wreck that car in some way, shape, or form. Or they're going to do stupid stuff with the car. They're going to go off-roading with the car. Because I think about what I used to do when I was an idiot and I was 16 years old and thought I was indestructible and didn't know the understanding of anything. I am going to be that parent that I don't care what I do for a living and that we are blessed to have what we have because of the career I have. But I am getting my kids a used jalopy and they are going to like it, damn it.
Y'all had a car at 16. I'm tripping on that. I had my legs or my mama driving me.
I didn't have a car at 16.
Mm-mm.
I had my mom's car. Well, it wasn't my car. It was my mom's car I got to use at 16.
I don't think my mom had a car when I was 16, but keep going.
Okay. But my point is this. I am not giving a 16. Do you believe in the theory of giving a 16-year-old child? I mean, look, LZ, you've been in this business for a long time. Mm-hmm. Isaiah is in his 20s, okay?
Yep.
And my guess is you didn't go and do the bow on the car for him. You know what I'm saying? Like with some brand new vehicle at some point. You gave him an education is what you did.
I did not do those things. Though I will say, though, George, this generation of young people do not want to drive the way that we and maybe like the generation after us wanted to drive. And so,
right, because Uber is a thing, yes.
So like I had to convince him just to get a driver's license. So it's like apples and oranges. Though in your example, clearly those young people weren't in the same boat. But I do know from the people that the young people who were hanging around Isaiah and at the time, you know, the high school and stuff, driving just wasn't that big of a deal. I don't know what I would have done if, you know, if it were, you know, maybe he would have gotten a jalopy too.
No, yeah, because maybe I feel like you need a jalopy because you're gonna screw up that car, right? Like when you first started driving. I mean, I got into accidents, even if it was stupid little things, like I'd bump into things like in my own driveway. You know,
my first car was a sort of like a bright red like Topaz.
Oh, my God. My mom's car was a bright red Tempo. It was like the same car, basically.
Same car. And I called the car, I think I called it Jesus Loves Jesse.
Why?
One, because I got the car because Jesus blessed me with it. Love right. was just love. And then Jesse was Uncle Jesse from the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, I see. That's funny.
So I gave it that name.
That's funny. That it's also funny that we literally almost had the same car.
That was the easy, cheapo, you know, get around Zoom Zoomobile.
Yeah.
But damn, I don't want to hate on how other people raise their kids and what they other give the kids and things like that. But it certainly seems like zero to a billion to give them that car at that age.
Dog, I'm not even going to tell you the make of the SUV. But just trust me when I tell you that this car is expensive as hell, okay? Like, I wouldn't buy that car for me. Because I'm like, nah, that's too much, okay? And these 16-year-old kids are rolling around in one. And I was like, oh, hell no. When these kids are too old, I ain't getting them. They are going to get a used car. I'm going to CarMax. It's happening whether they like it or not.
You saying he was not poor?
No.
Laura doesn't think you were poor.
I don't think you were. You said CarMax. My mom would have said, we got to go to the street, find that for sale. That's how I got my first car. It was a tour.
Well, I'm saying CarMax for my kids now. I didn't say there was CarMax didn't even exist back then.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. You know, we had like the little used lots. We couldn't go into there. My mom's like, no.
Well, the only reason we had a Tempo was because my dad worked for Ford.
Oh, my gosh. My stepfather worked for Ford. Hey,
get out of here.
Did they know each other?
Maybe.
Were they in the assembly line?
No, not in the assembly line. He worked first in parts and then worked his way to salesperson and then worked his way up to like a manager for the import stuff. Because they were like, oh, we should get the guy that speaks Spanish to be part of our import department because we got a whole lot of business in South America.
Not a bad plan at all. Not a bad plan.
Greg, what was your first car?
So I don't fit in this conversation, George. It's not a good place for me.
Well, don't tell me you were driving like some like fancy car when you first
I was driving. My first car was an Acura CL. So
what is an Acura CL? I'm not familiar with Acura.
It's just an Acura. It was a two-door Acura.
Oh, so you had like a fancy coupe.
Yeah, I had a nice little car. I was lucky to have it. But I also had people around that I lived in Calabasas, man. Like, Calabasas.
It's okay. People. You don't have to be sad about that. Like, I wish I lived in Calabasas when I was growing up.
Don't be ashamed, Greg.
Listen. This is not about shame. No. This is a shame-free zone, okay?
Right, fair. But, like, I had people that were at the school that I went to, Calabasas High School, that people went to. They had brand new red Mustangs, and they would crash them, and they'd come back the next day, and they
with
have
a brand new red Mustang.
Yeah. I didn't get that. I wasn't in that general area.
My kids will never be that. They are going to drive. They're going to be. I don't care if they get clowned. If they don't want to drive, then so be it. Then you go take an Uber to school every day.
My son cares so little about vehicles that he's never once asked to have one. He never once asked to buy one. And when he graduated,
it is a pain
college,
in the ass. Let's be real, you know. Like,
but I mean, again, back to your point, though. Like, you know, when we were that age, you know, trying to drive and be independent was like everything,
right? Because that was independence. Literally.
But he and all his friends were very content just to have all the parents drive them around. They did not care. And then he went to college in New York, which, you know, no one drives a car.
Right. Oh, right.
In
New York. For sure. There. Yeah.
And so, you know, he had to he was so distant from driving when he came out into Arizona for the pandemic. His license had expired. He had noticed and he had to come and get an Arizona license because he just had not used it and didn't even notice that it had expired.
That's funny. By the way, our pal Jonathan Watson tweets us and says, "My mom's first car, she got at a police auction."
That's good. That's the role right there, bro.
But by the way, those police auction cars are scary on the highway because you think that's a cop in your rearview mirror and you go slow as hell
every time.
Yeah, slow every as hell time. When you see that car in the back. When you see that, what were those cars? Those Crown Victorias? You know what I mean? That they used to have in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Or those Chevy Malibus. Yeah, come on.
It is best to be at the table than on the menu. So it's best to have people think you're a cop than have them be the person who thinks a cop's behind them.
Yeah. Well, for sure. All right. Coming up next, we've got more 81-point Kobe observations as we remember the 15-year anniversary. If you remember where you were, who you were with, if you were at the game, where you were watching it, hit us up, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. We didn't get to Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis being honest as hell. We'll tell you what he said in 3 minutes.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
What You Need to Know is brought to you by Morongo. Play it safe, good times. Greg, what do you got? Gregory?
The button is not working. Ah, there it goes. Jeez. Yep. Oh, not clicking that. The touch screen. Anyway, Kike Hernandez, who we all love as a Dodger, has signed a 2-year, $14 million deal with the Boston Red Sox and is being reunited with Alex Verdugo. LZ, I know you have some feelings for Kike Hernandez. How do you feel about this move for Kike?
I am happy for him and his family that he got the bag. But as a Dodger fan, I am definitely sad.
Yeah.
Kike brought stuff to the field that you just can't quantify. And we're going to miss that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy for him, obviously, because if you can get the money, get the money. And he's going to play for a guy in Alex Cora that I know he has a good history with, which I think is kind of cool. I think it's an unfortunate situation for the Dodgers because he was such an integral piece of what they've done, but I just trust Andrew Friedman, man. That's just the deal.
I mean, I trust him too. I'm just saying I'm going to miss Kike. Do you love me? Calm down.
Oh Laura. God. I got one for you real quick, Greg. I'm going to go off script here.
Sure.
LZ, this just came up on my timeline. SportsCenter's Michael Eaves, formerly here of Los Angeles, has a cameo in the new Eminem music video that's debuting Saturday. Eaves plays himself in the new music video that debuts during UFC Live of Poirier and McGregor's pre-show.
Awesome.
How about that?
That is fantastic news. Way to go, Eaves.
If you could pick a current hip-hop star to appear in their music video, who would it be?
J. Cole.
Ooh, that's a good one. Oh, man. That is so good. Laura?
J. Cole. If I can't get in J. Cole, then give me Kendrick. But J. Cole, that's just my...
He's so nice, too.
I almost said the wrong word. Yeah. But
I wish... I would love to be in the ATM video of J. Cole. Like, that would have been... I would have loved to have been in that video. Laura, do you have one?
J. Cole. I love
okay.
J. Cole.
I'm going to go with Kendrick. Because I love Kendrick. I mean, I don't think there's a bad Kendrick song. I think all of them are excellent, so I'm a huge fan. Greg, do you have any hip-hop star that you would love to be in their video?
I was actually going to say Kendrick, too. So, yeah, okay. I was. Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right. Is that because that's the only hip-hop artist you know?
Oh, come on!
Current.
I'm just asking questions.
No, you can ask questions. Current. I probably know names. I don't listen to too much hip-hop. I know more old school.
Yeah, give me – like, listen, I will say this. There's not a lot of young hip-hop stars that I'm listening to. Mm-hmm. I do like J. Cole. I do like Kendrick. Obviously, those are kind of two of my top favorite at the moment as far as male artists. I do think the ladies are bringing the fire, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether it's Megan.
Cardi.
Cardi. And who am I missing?
What's the male equivalent of WAP?
Ooh. I don't know. Maybe someone in the audience can help us out with that. Laura, what do you think?
You're not getting me in this one. Nope, nope.
Okay.
I'm
going
to get in trouble.
That's What You Need to Know, brought to you by Morongo. Play it safe. Good times. So, LZ, before I solicited calls, if people want to chime in and give us their thoughts and whatever they remember from Kobe's 81-point game. Today is the 15-year anniversary. Feel free to do so at 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. We've been celebrating that all day just because, man, it was such an amazing accomplishment. And to be able to just kind of remember his life would be awesome. And if you haven't seen, I've got a story up on ESPN.com where I talked to all the guys, the top guys that had to defend Kobe throughout his career, some of the best defenders of that era. And they had such great things and showed such reverence towards Kobe. It's on ESPN.com, the ESPN app, or on my Twitter page, at Sedano. You can find it there.
What did you learn during the research?
What I learned was how intense those guys took that particular battle. So, like, Shane Battier said to me that he would literally tell his friends, his family, his, you know, his wife, the kids, don't talk to me on the day Kobe was playing against him. Like, nobody talk to me. Like, I am just focused in, laser focused, okay, on Kobe. And, it, you know, and I look, I know Shane a little bit, so I feel like that absolutely makes a lot of sense. Shane also talked about the hand in the face game, which became infamous, if you recall. Mm-hmm. Was like, he basically said, I did that knowing that Kobe would be so infuriated that I did that, that he would just do whatever it took to try to beat the hand in the face and would worry less potentially about the quality of shots that he was taking. He said, so for that one game, it did kind of work. And, you know, it didn't work after that very much longer. But that one game, he was 11 of 33 in that game. So that, like, he felt like a small victory, a rare small victory for him. And Tony Allen. So Tony Allen really, you know, made the story. He talked about the first time he defended Kobe, that he was out there and he was like, all right, I'm ready. That Paul Pierce was hyping him up. He was like, yo, man, you got this. You got this. Okay, you guard me in practice. You got this. That's Kobe Bryant. Go get him. Go get him. Let's go. Let's go. And that.
Not the same beast, dog.
And then he says he got out there and he was like, man, what am I going to do now? You know what I mean? Like, remember that Eddie Murphy Raw when that dude, when he said he was fighting with the guy after the Rocky movie and then he punched him in the face and he's like, yeah, yeah, don't nobody mess with me. And then he looked and the guy was like, all right, that's how I like it. And then he was like, oh, crap, now I'm in trouble. Now I got to fight. You know what I mean? So it was like that. And Tony said his first game, he fouled out in 8 minutes. And it was 7 minutes and 41 seconds. I looked it up.
Oh, my gosh.
Insane. Like, he got him that quick. Like, it was the, he said it was the most embarrassing thing. And he said that would never happen to him again. And he didn't. He said he would. He knew when Kobe was on the schedule that he would eat, breathe, and sleep Kobe. In between eating meals, he'd be watching Kobe video. When he'd be stretching, he'd be watching Kobe videos. He'd get treatment, he'd be watching Kobe film. Like, these guys took that assignment as serious as anything they ever had to do on a basketball floor.
I you know, it's, as I said, I'm a big Kobe fan and have seen him play, I don't know, north of 20 times, maybe even 30 times or whatever. Which is a lot, considering I didn't live in L.A. when he was playing. But the thing that I always figured was horrific as a defender was that Kobe was so complete as an offensive force that I would just be afraid to give away anything with my hip positioning.
Right.
So if my hips were facing one way, I knew Kobe was going to kill me another way. Like, yeah. It was like there's nowhere you could place your hips that Kobe wouldn't be able to take advantage of you being off balance. And I was just like going, everyone else, not everyone else, but a lot of great offensive players, they have their stuff, right? And that's what they're going to do, and you can't stop their stuff. With Kobe, when you watch him play, you realize he had so much stuff that he was actually letting you decide which one he was going to use based upon where your hips and your feet were located. And I was just like, that's just got to be like nerve-wracking as a defender.
So you here's a story that didn't make the actual story on print, but if you go to the ESPN's YouTube, it's in my conversation with Tony Allen. Mm-hmm. So he said that during, you know, they played obviously twice in the finals in, when he was with the Celtics in 08 and 10. And he said that, he's like, Kobe was so smart, man. He used every little thing to his advantage. So he said there was a play where, you know, Tony was like, dude, I never ran the triangle at any spot, but because I faced him so many times, I knew the triangle. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he's like, there was a play where they would swing the ball. They would get it to Kobe. He would then swing it one more time. They'd set a back screen for him, and he would then get the, be able to get the ball in the post and then do his magic down there, right? Yep. And he said, so I knew that play was coming. So what happened was, when Powell set the screen, I shot the screen, and when they swung the ball to Kobe, I was able to grab his left hand and with my left hand steal the ball and go down for a transition layup. And he's like, ooh, I got him. You know what I mean? And then he was like,
He said they came back and ran the same play. And then on the he's like, oh, I'm going to get him again. Like, this is crazy.
No,
and,
Tony, no.
And then he says that while the ball is swinging, Kobe's talking to Pau in Spanish, right? And that Pau comes and fakes setting the screen, and Kobe fakes going and darts back to the three-point line. Tony has darted through the screen, so he's completely out of position. And then he tries to come back to contest the three, and Kobe hits a three in his face. And it's like that. He's like, man, he drove me crazy with that kind of stuff. Oh, and he did that stuff all the time.
He had to, dog. Like, yeah. Like when you just watch him, you're like going, he can shoot floaters with both hands.
Yeah.
He can spin off both shoulders. Mm-hmm. He can go glass off every angle, basically.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what you did as a defender on an individual basis, he had a counter move for.
Yeah.
And he developed counter moves very early. And I was just like going, man, that just has to be just like even Jordan, as great as he was, in my opinion, and I know a lot of people have their own opinions, but in my opinion, and when it comes to footwork, I felt that Kobe's footwork was pushed to the test and
sure.
thus appeared to be better than Jordan's because he had to have so many more answers to defenders than Jordan.
Right, right. Agreed. Let me go to the phones here. Steven in Studio City said he snuck into the Kobe 81-point game. Steven, how did you sneak into the game?
I didn't sneak in.
But oh, you tried.
Forget. No, okay. People forget that the Clippers played that same day.
Right.
And my middle school took us on a field trip. They took us on a field trip.
Okay.
And me and my cousin at the game, we kept talking about how we should just hide in the bathrooms and stay for the night game because we're obviously Laker fans. And, of course, he scores 81, and we just called each other and talked about it the whole night, how we could have been there if we just stayed in the bathroom.
Did you even think about – did you actually make it into the bathroom, or did you just
– No, no, we were like 13, so we knew it was going to be bad because it was a school field trip.
Oh, that's
funny. We didn't want to risk that.
That's funny. That is funny. But
yeah.
13 well, years old, man. Good for you.
R.I.P. Kobe.
All right, man, Steven. Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. Let me grab Manuel and Gardena. Manuel, how long has it been since we've talked to you?
Too long. Mi hermano cubano.
Hey,
and
buddy.
LZ, the LA Times legend. Hey, so, man, I hope you guys indulge me because, man, this takes me way back. These were the days right after you had to pick Shaq or Kobe, right?
Yeah.
And I remember I was in the Kobe minority, man. There was a lot of Shaq faithful, right?
Yeah.
And, to me, in reality, Kobe was the best NBA player from 2003 to, like, 2009. But we all remember because of the Colorado stuff, he did not get acknowledged. And this game, to me, was like the cement, like the exclamation point of him telling the league, you know what, you guys don't have to give me the MVP or whatnot, but we all know that I'm the best that there is right now. And in my honest opinion, like you were saying, LZ, I mean, MJ was something, but Kobe was literally the closest thing to MJ I ever saw on the court. Carbon copy, man. You know what I mean? Like just a little bit less probably, but Kobe had his own skill set. He had the longevity a little more, I think, of being so dynamic. And, man, R.I.P. Kobe, I can't believe it's been 15 years. Hey, fellas, keep up the great work, not the good job. You guys do excellent stuff.
Thank you, Manuel. Brother. Appreciate it, buddy. Manuel Gardena drops off, opens it up for you. Feel free to bring your Kobe 81-point game memories at 877-710-ESPN. Coming up next, though, Clint Yates, our pal, is going to stop by. We'll talk to him about Hank Aaron's passing. We want to talk to him about championship weekend and all the things going on this weekend as well. He will join us in 3 minutes.